Welcome to Women on Air, a weekly show about women, feminism, and social justice, brought to you by CFUV's Women's Radio Collective.
So you're listening to CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. We also stream online at cfuv.uvic.ca. And you're listening to Women on Air, and I'm Jen, your host. So today I have several interviews actually going on. So first I have Amy from the Back Homes, and then I have someone from the Women's Center coming down and talking to us about their panty drive. And then lastly I have Kirsten Van Ritsen from the Funny Women Festival talking, so that's a pre-recorded one. So we'll just jump right into it. So I have Amy here in the studio with me. Hi, Amy.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good.
Yeah, awesome. So you're a local artist, and you're actually playing this coming Thursday, February 20th, at the Copper Owl. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty exciting. And you have a couple other shows coming up. I saw in March as well, right?
Yeah, we're playing in March at the Copper Owl with Dead Meadow on the 13th. And we are also playing with Moon Duo in Vancouver on April 30th. So those are a couple bigger shows that we have coming up that we're really excited about.
That's really awesome. Mm-hmm. So what can the audience expect from this show? Is it going to be old favorites or newer stuff that you've been working on?
Well, we've been playing newer stuff lately, but we always try and throw in some tracks off of our album because I feel like it's still kind of new to some people. But we're working on some recording right now, actually. So we have a bunch of new songs that we've sort of started playing, and yeah, I think we'll throw in some of those and probably also hopefully a few acoustic ones, like without our drum machine, so a little bit mellower.
What type of how is your new music different from your old music, or is there like an evolution of your music, or
I think we're still evolving, like we've been evolving all along, and the new stuff is I don't know, it's kind of crazy, it's kind of complex, a little bit heavier. There's lots of layers of stuff. At this point it's hard to tell what we're actually going to put out next, but what we're working on is, like, there's a lot of crazy stuff, and I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, that's awesome. So your current album that's already out, it has kind of a melodic reverberating sound, which is what I had written down. What inspired the sound for you guys?
We were big fans of sort of, I guess you could call it like psychedelic music or space rock, stuff that uses a lot of reverb and echo and delay, and a lot of the bands that we like, you know, or have been listening to for ages, have that aspect to their sound, and that's just what feels the most comfortable for us when we're playing and stuff. Like, yeah, when I have the, you know, the right sound on my guitar and my vocals, it just feels right, and that's how I want it to be. Yeah.
So do you find that often when you go into the studio or when you're trying something new, it just kind of flows for you, or does sometimes it's more of a, you have to work a little bit harder to get that flow?
We have both cases, definitely. We have some songs that we wrote, like we really sat down, we wrote it. Now we're trying to get the best performance of it. And, you know, those are really challenging and they're real puzzles to figure out. And then there's other times when we'll just sit down, like we do all our recording in our living room, actually, lately. So we'll just sit down and just be messing around and we'll come up with a new song. And that's kind of I like both, actually, because I like it when it's easy and you get great results, and also when you have to work hard and figure out the best way to present something, and when you get it finally, it's really rewarding.
What inspires, like, the lyrics for your music, or what are
It's most of the songs on our album Case wrote the lyrics for, so there a lot of them I think were inspired by our leaving Montreal, sort of, and, you know, starting a new part of our lives, I guess, and just starting to make music and really try to realize our creative dreams, which is always kind of a big scary thing, but it's pretty awesome. So I think a lot of the lyrics are about that. And for me, in the songs that I've written, I never for me, I guess, and I think for Case too, like sometimes just a line comes to you and it has meaning at a time, mm-hmm. certain time and place, and then you build on that. And then 3 years later, you'll look at a song and be like, oh, that's what it meant, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's very open to interpretation and doesn't need to be taken too literally ever.
So in a lot of in preparation for this interview, I read a lot of interviews that you'd already done previously, and everybody talks about this trip that you guys took from Montreal to Saskatchewan, and now that you're here, I was just wondering if you also, I have a bit of a travel bug, and I was mm-hmm. wondering if that kind of what pushed you to travel, or if there was other motivation behind that.
We had both been living in Montreal for 10 years mm-hmm. Before leaving, but we had only been playing music together. I think we started maybe the year before we left, and it was sort of like this new beginning, and I don't know, when I look back on it now, it was an opportunity that came up to live in Victoria and rent a house for cheap, so that was sort of our motivation, that was the spark, and then we realized that, like, I think now that if we hadn't left, we probably wouldn't be doing what we're doing right now musically, because we were so just caught up in our regular lives, our regular mm-hmm. things that we did, regular distractions, whatever. Mm-hmm. So it was really important for us to leave and then to have that time. We spent 9 months in Saskatchewan living in a cabin over the winter, well, fall, winter, and spring. And it was just a serious cleansing of the palate, and it was really it was a really wonderful experience, and that was where we really started working on music. And
mm-hmm. How did you end up in Saskatchewan? You're from Saskatchewan.
I grew up in Regina, so mm-hmm. the cottage we were staying at is my family's. I grew up out there every summer in my life and stuff. Mm-hmm.
So it was nice. It was kind of like a going home for you then. Mm-hmm. So it was that nice break. What were your lives like before you started getting into music? You said you kind of got stuck into this day-to-day routine that I think a lot of people find themselves trapped by. Mm-hmm. And what were you doing, and how did you finally get out of it?
Well, yeah, I wouldn't say that we were in a musical rut or anything. I'd actually just started, maybe 3 years before leaving Montreal, I started playing in a band, like my first, real band. And it was amazing. It was an absolutely amazing group of people. And we were having a really fun time. And, it was great. Like, I can't say anything bad about it. It was just so special and so supportive and important for me. But I think, I don't know. There's just a lot of distraction, I guess. There's a lot of stuff going on all the time. There's always 10 shows and 10 parties and whatever. And at the time, I really was thankful for a break from that and just to be able to not have anything to do and just focus a bit more, I guess, on my, my art and music and stuff. So,
mm-hmm. So is there a genre of music that that's different from what you do now that you would like to experiment with and bring into your music?
genre. I don't know. I think already now we kind of cross a few different genres with what we're doing. And mm-hmm. we actually have a new song that's like a little bit reggae-esque, which is kind of crazy and, not intentional, but pretty awesome. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, there's always a little twinge of country, I think, in what we do. I think eventually we will record a bunch of acoustic-y things and they might have a completely different sound.
Right.
But we always like to keep stuff a little bit weird and interesting. Yeah.
That's awesome. So did you always know that you wanted to be in music, or how did you get involved in it?
That's a good question. When I look back, because I've just surprised a lot of people by, when they're like, what, you're doing this now? Because I wasn't a musician for a long time. And mm-hmm. I was an artist first. And I think, just living in Montreal, everyone is an artist and everyone's a musician. And so, and all my friends were musicians. And it was just, I don't know if, I think that was definitely that helped it, that made it easy to happen. Mm-hmm. I always loved, music, and I was always singing and stuff, but I was very closeted about it, about singing and playing guitar. I've been playing guitar since I was 13, but, you know, only started really playing in front of other people when I was in my 20s, and then playing, like, in a band, I think I was 27 when we started, when I first started playing electric music in front of people. So it was very late, or it felt late or something, but I don't know. Yeah, it was great. Like, it just felt like the missing piece of the puzzle, and that form of self-expression, I feel, is more accessible in a way than visual art, and I just love it so much. It's so much fun. Yeah.
That's great. So what do you like most about being on stage now?
What I really enjoy now is, like, I don't know, it just feels good to not be afraid, I guess, because the more that I do it, the less scared I get, you know, before I go up in front of all these people. And just, I just go into this zone in my head that's really nice and calm, and usually, like, results in a good performance, knock on wood. So that's really fun. And just, yeah, I love the music that we make, and it's super fun.
Yeah, and I'm sure that passion comes through when you're on stage for your audience to feel.
Yeah.
So we're going to just play one of your songs. And so I was going to play You Gotta Move. Is there a story behind that one at all? Or?
Yeah, I think, like, the story behind that is sort of, like, you know, not to be afraid to make stuff happen and get moving, be creative, make art, follow your passion, etc., etc. I think that's the motivation behind that. That's Case's song, but that's what he told me it was about.
Thank you.
So I'm here with Amy from the Backhomes, and we're just talking about her music and her work and leading up to this place where she is now. And we were just talking about what she studied in university. So you studied anthropology, and you did some journalism as well.
Yeah, I have a degree in anthropology from Concordia University in Montreal. And while I was a student, I got involved at the school paper and started writing. I became an editor there, and I took as many journalism classes as I could at the same time. It was my fake minor. And so that was actually what I thought my career was going to be, was a freelance journalist for a little while. But then things went the other way.
Yeah. And you said you moved to Montreal to become an activist. What were the causes that you were passionate about?
Well, the cause of the day was, a lot of stuff with the anti-globalization movement and free trade. And I was there during the FTA protests in Quebec City.
That's so cool.
That was when I first moved there. So actually, one of the first things I did when I moved to Montreal was go to a World Trade Organization protest that all these people got arrested at. And that was sort of the radicalizing, first experience where it's like, okay, this is not cool. And I want to find out more about this and get involved. So
that's cool. My first experience in Quebec with activism, so we were talking about how not only is music and art the main thing in Montreal, but so is activism. And when I was there at the student protests a couple of years ago.
Yeah, cool.
So that was really interesting. I wasn't at the big ones, but just the smaller ones. And it's interesting to see the differentiation between how the people feel and how the government acts. And I feel like maybe because it's Quebec and they're a little bit different than the rest of Canada, there is a little bit more citizen awareness, I would say.
Engagement,
I just lost my train of thought there for a second. are those issues still things that are in the forefront of your mind now and how you live your life?
Yeah, definitely. There's no denying the realities of the world, the injustices and everything, and I think about that stuff all the time. And think about what a privilege it is to be an artist and to be able to live the life that I get to live. And, I haven't really gotten involved in stuff since moving to Victoria yet, but I'm looking forward to finding, ways to lend a hand, whether it's creatively or organizationally in some stuff that's going on, because there's lots of great initiatives out here.
Well, yeah. I was going to say, for the West Coast, I'd say we're definitely the activist, hippie-ish area of BC. I guess BC is also, all of BC is a little bit like that, but there are certain parts. So currently you're an artist in residence at the Royal BC Museum. So how did you get this great opportunity?
Well, there's a fellow who works there named Chris O'Connors, and he saw an art show that I had at the 50/50 Arts Collective. That was two summers ago now. When I first moved here, it was the first show that I put together. And he saw it and checked it out and then got in touch with me last year to participate in the Museum Amplification Project, which was a night of music and visuals things at the museum that was last April. And then he had the wonderful idea of putting together an artist residency for the museum, which I think it might be one of the first ones ever, because usually natural history museums don't have artists in residence. And so, so he contacted me and the two other artists that are involved. And we were, of course, very excited to check it out. And
I was looking at your sketches before this, and they're quite beautiful. And I was wondering what your main medium is, because it looked like there's pen and ink and a little bit of some other stuff. So I was just wondering what you work with.
Yeah, I mostly work with ink and water. So I have very sort of watery style, and there's all different colors of inks that you can get. So sometimes people think it's watercolor, but for the most part, I'm just using various drawing inks and a pen sometimes and pencil sometimes. But yeah, mostly ink and water.
And ink is really great because it has, I find, a lot more of a vibrant color to it, because watercolor definitely fades out, but ink, you can get that really great pop of color.
Yeah, totally.
That I loved working with ink when I did my one art class in high school. So what's your inspiration for your artwork? So you're looking at all these specimens behind the scenes. So how does that play into what you're doing?
Yeah, well, that's just really fun. Like to get to go, like the last time we went, I haven't done a blog post on this yet, but I got to, you know, look at a wolf skeleton and what else? Like, I don't know, different, all these different bones and taxidermied animals and birds and stuff like that. And it's just great, you know, to sketch because it's fun, but I also like the sort of journalistic aspect of getting to look behind the scenes. And reportage illustration is like a term, it's just people who kind of tell a story through sketches. So in a way, like, I'm trying, and I feel like I'm only getting going, you know, actually posting a lot about this, because we haven't been doing the residency for that long, but yeah, just going behind the scenes, doing sketches, talking a little bit about what goes on, as a way to sort of help people understand what happens in a museum, because I honestly didn't even know that there was so much going on behind the scenes. I thought it was all about what's open to the public. So, yeah, it's really interesting.
So what stands out most for you behind the scenes that you didn't know about before you became an artist in residence?
Well, just the fact that there's scientists and biologists and stuff working back there and taking care of these huge collections of thousands and thousands and thousands of specimens, like that, some which date back to the 1800s. And, you know, there's, I don't know, it's just been every place we've visited has been super interesting. And, yeah, and the people who work there are really nice, and I don't know, they're kind of like interesting characters in themselves. And yeah.
What how has been your interaction with the scientists, and how have they responded to your work?
Well, yeah, so at first I think, you know, Chris was going around and talking to people and you know, saying, okay, we're bringing these artists in, and I'm sure a lot of people were kind of like, oh great, like, it's going to disrupt our day, we're going to have to deal with these weirdos, yada yada. And so but now that we've done a handful of visits, and he shares like everything that we, you know, of the sketches or the things that we write about it with everyone, and people are really excited. And so now I'll go in and they'll be like, oh, you did that thing that I saw on your blog, that's super cool. And so they seem like really enthusiastic, and they tell us, you know, lots of cool stuff. They pull out things they think are interesting for us to look at. And yeah, so it's great.
That's awesome. So what have you learned from being an artist in residence?
I mean, it's just like it's a fun position to have. I feel like this is the first year that it's happened here in Victoria, so things are really open. So I feel like we're all learning, you know, what it can be, what the possibilities are and stuff. Yeah, so to me, it's just, you know, it's just a great time. And it's also just, I love any activity where I get to go out with a sketchbook and do drawing outside of the studio, outside of my studio, and just, you know, have fun and freedom. And it's good for my technique and stuff as well. Yeah.
And you've said that you did art for a long time earlier before the break. How long have you been working on your art?
Well, it's something that I've done my whole life, but I did not pursue it academically. I did a year of art school and then I quit because it just freaked me out, and also I wanted to go do other things for a while. So I only really started doing art again when I graduated from university, and it just kind of, you know, snuck up and smacked me in the face and was like, you have to do this. Yeah, so I've been actively like working as an illustrator and making art since, I'd say, about 2007.
Yeah. So quite a while. Do you find that your art and your music inspire each other, or do you try to keep the two aspects separate?
They do inspire. I think the music inspires art for me right now, and especially video stuff I've been doing a bit more of, and just design stuff for the band. And I think those two go together really well. I think it's all coming out of me, so it's all connected. And I felt like maybe I should try to keep the two separate. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to my own personal art, because the illustration and the personal art are separate in my mind, I think that the personal art and the music go together really well. And I look forward to that continuing to happen, mm-hmm. you know, and evolve.
Yeah. Right. And so, Leslie, what's up next for you as an artist, and what's up next for you and your band?
Well, as an artist, I don't know. I mean, I'm just doing, I don't have any big shows coming up or anything, but mm-hmm. I do want to put one together soon because I'm craving, you know, painting on more drum skins because mm-hmm. that's what I usually do for my personal stuff. So hopefully a show coming up somewhere. Case and I are applying to do some musical visual collaborations mm-hmm. at some galleries. Mm-hmm. So we're really hoping to get into that because that I think that would be really fun, sort of experimental thing that we could do. And yeah, in terms of the band, we have this show on Thursday at Copper Owl. It's going to be a really fun night. The other bands that are playing, Le Rat, is going to do a solo performance, and Zen Mystery Fog, who are from Courtney/Vancouver, they're really good. Mm-hmm. And we're going to have DJs playing tapes, which is going to yeah, I'm really excited that. About. yeah, so that's our next show. And then, you know, after that, we have more. We're hoping to be on the road a bunch this summer, and we're finishing a record. And yeah, mm-hmm.
that's
so
great.
Lots going on.
And sorry, I just thought of one more question. Mm-hmm. How have people been responding to your blog? Because most of the time, people put their art up in galleries and things like that, but you're actually putting the stuff that you're doing at the BC Royal Museum up on a blog and talking and writing about it. How have people, the public, responded to that?
Good, I think. I mean, I don't get a lot of direct feedback from people, but whenever somebody, you know, has seen my work, it's because they've probably checked out my blog. And mm-hmm. it seems like every time I do a new post, there's more and more people finding out about it and stuff. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think they like it. A blog is a really fun thing because it's not Facebook and mm-hmm. it's not Twitter. And it's like, I don't know, someone can go there whenever they want on their own dime and check it out and for as long as they want. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, it's kind of my favorite, like anything to avoid social media. Although maybe a blog is social media, but it's
I think
like
it's social
cooler.
Media, but it's more personal.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if you can't more personal.
It's more like independent or yeah, something mm-hmm. feels different.
Yeah, that's great. So thank you so much for coming on the show today. Really cool. appreciate having
thank you
here.
Yeah,
so again, you guys, if you're listening, they are playing, or the Backbones are playing, Thursday, February 20th at the Copper Owl. And you can check out all of Amy's work on her blog. What's your blog address?
Well, I'll give you my website is my name, amyvandrimlin.com. It's long. <That's> I won't bother spelling it, but yeah, you should be able to find it or via the blog, amysketchblog.wordpress.com, mm-hmm.
Or,
Facebook, etc.
Yeah, or Googling on the Royal BC website
yeah.
or museum website.
Yeah.
So great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So we're actually going to have one more song by the Backbones, and it's the song Backward Sunshine.
Thank you.
So in the studio with me right now, I have Kay from the Women's Center. And so she's actually going to talk to us about the Women's Center panty drive that you're doing. So can you tell me what a panty drive is and why you chose to do a panty drive?
Well, a panty drive is when you collect panties for charity. And we're doing it, and not just panties, we're collecting panties, socks, blankets, chocolates, monetary donations, sanitary products, and incontinence supplies. So all sorts of different things for women in the downtown east side, as well as sex workers in Victoria. Mm-hmm. And they'll be distributed through Piers.
Right. Yeah. Those are two great organizations. We've actually talked with Marion Little from Piers quite a few times on this show because they've had some budget cuts this year. So there's a list. So you said like panties, tampons, any kind of anything related, I guess, to women's, I guess, stuff like that or anything else.
Yeah. Basically just nice little treats with a focus on hygiene items, but also chocolates and stuff like that. It started as a Valentine's Day thing, but it's done every year around this time of year.
That's now great. Still. So why did you choose those two organizations?
Well, both the Downtown Eastside Women's Center and Piers have some really serious ongoing struggles right now that they're undergoing. Like, every year, the rallies that they hold double as vigils because so many women are dying, and it's just really intense, the political struggle that's going on, and really really pertinent right now on so many levels. In both cases, big changes are happening at the government level. Mm-hmm. Big changes are happening. Hopefully, we'll see big changes in the way that these populations are treated, and this is a really practical way that people can help.
Yeah, like you said, there's a lot when talking to Marion, there's a lot of budget cuts that are going on with Piers. They were cut quite a bit this year, and they've actually had to close their doors partially to accommodate it. So if people wanted to help out, where would they donate their stuff to?
There are a few places. There are boxes here at UVic. You can just drop it off at the Women's Center in the sub, as well as in Clarahue, B11 and B115. You could also drop any donations off at Camus Books, Discovery Coffee, Camison in their Women's Center, as well as the Women's Center in the Camus in Interurban.
So that's great. And so what are the dates of the panty drive?
The panty drive drop-offs are happening right now, and they go until March 1st, 2014.
Great. And if somebody wanted to find out more information, where could they find it?
They could find it on the Women's Center website, I imagine.
And you also have a Facebook page as well that I saw, so you can look it up on Facebook. And is there anything else you'd like to add?
No,
that's everything.
Yep, that's about
great. So yeah, if you guys are interested in helping out the Downtown Eastside Women's Center or Piers Victoria and helping sex workers in Victoria and things like that, definitely drop off all of these items. So again, those are panties, tampons, like chocolates, just little treats or something like that, to help these women who are not in the best situation sometimes. And again, those can be dropped off here at UVic or at the Camosun Women's Center. And you can find out more information on Facebook. So thank you for coming on the show today. That was awesome. And good luck with your panty drive.
Thank you.
Yeah. So up next, we have an interview with Kirsten Van Ritsen. And she's actually talking about the Funny Women Festival that's coming up here in Victoria. It's actually this weekend, I believe, and it's specifically a comedy festival that features women and I guess sketch comedy and improv and things like that. So stay tuned, and we're going to just listen to that interview. I'm talking with Kirsten Van Ritsen, who is the artistic producer of the Funny Women Festival that's taking place in Victoria from February 21st to 22nd. Hi, Kirsten.
Hi.
So why don't we just start with talking a little bit about you? So how did you get into comedy and to where you are today?
Oh boy, how much time do we have? I started out taking a theater program at university, and I started working as a professional actor pretty much right away. I fell into doing other forms of performance like improv and sketch comedy, and then eventually stand-up as well. So I've worked a long time in the business right across Canada.
Wow, that's great. And you actually have written a book too. I saw that when I was looking into this. Can you tell us a little bit about your book?
That's right. I wrote a book called The Comedy Diva Diaries, which is fiction about a late 29-year-old woman who's trying to make a go of it in stand-up comedy. And she doesn't realize that she's kind of like her own worst enemy. She's kind of mean to people and stuff. And so the book is about all these auditions and shows she does that go really badly. And hopefully it's amusing to read.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I saw that. It looked really funny. What is the Funny Women's Festival and how did it get started?
There are comedy festivals in different cities across North America, and a lot of time they have a lot of men and maybe just a couple of spots for women. And I really wanted to give a showcase to women who are comedians, because it's kind of it's a hard world to work in for a woman, and I just really wanted to give them the spotlight. And so hopefully this is an annual event. So this is the first one in Victoria, and we're really focusing on local talent. So I've got 20 women who are performing. Some are from Winnipeg, Edmonton, and Vancouver. The majority are from right here in Victoria. And there's a huge range of diversity in age as well. I've got everyone from a UVic student, who's an anthropology major, who's only been doing comedy for a short time, Justine Drummond, all the way up to people who are almost near retirement age. And so everything from amateur to professionals.
That's great. So how did people get involved, or how did they hear about this? Or did you know them personally and contact them?
Kind of a mix of both. I had produced actually a television show that featured comedy women. We shot it live in Victoria a year ago, and it's just now on the air. It's called She Kills Me, and it can be seen on APTN on Wednesday nights. But if you don't have cable or you prefer to watch TV online, the full episodes are also broadcast, on the web at aptn.ca. So I was looking for funny women from right across Canada, or primarily Western Canada, for the TV series, and that created a lot of excitement, and it felt like, oh, you know, let's make this a festival feeling. And so I found a lot of comedians that way, and I also teach a stand-up comedy class.
Okay.
So that's how I've met a lot of the Victoria comedians, is I've actually taught them in a class and give them their push and their first experience on stage.
Right. Could you teach me a basic comedy class technique to be a little bit funnier?
Oh, that's a hard one. Well, when I teach improv, the first rule of improv is to say yes to anyone's ideas. Okay. But in stand-up, I think, you know what, the main message I talk about is to be honest with yourself and to talk about the things that are kind of painful to you. And if you can find the truth in that, then most people will be able to relate.
Mm-hmm. A little bit self-deprecating, but funny.
Yeah, I think that's where we're at in comedy right now, is we talk about the real stuff. You talk about a horrible breakup, and chances are there's going to be people in the room who totally identify with that. And if you can turn your horrible experience into something funny, then people are going to really appreciate that.
That's really great. There's also a big, when you think about comedy, there's a big push to talk a little bit about political issues, I find, or not really political, but something that's kind of challenged race relations or gender relations.
Oh, absolutely. I think comedy really gives you the opportunity to speak out about social politics, if that's it's your opportunity to make a commentary and to sort of do it in a way that will get people laughing but also thinking. So comedy to me is like wide open. You can go in either direction to talk about social politics, even talking about, you know, whether it's just your breakup or your body image. There's always a bit of a social commentary to that, right?
So why do you think that men have dominated the comedy scene for so long, and women, I don't know if they feel intimidated to get involved or what it is, but
I know it's such a good question, because in television right now we've got women really leading the way. If you look at Tina Fey and Amy Poehler and the women who are writing and creating television, but the stand-up world has always been this sort of male dominated place, and it's hard to say why, because if you go to a comedy club, 50% of the women or 50% of the audience are women, right? And there are girls who go out together or they'll go with a guy. But for some reason, you don't see women on stage as often, and it can be a harder career choice for them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Why do you think it's important to highlight women in comedy? I guess you kind of answered that a little bit.
Yeah, but just to give us a voice. And as you say, whether we're talking about personal issues or politics, it's just, it's a fantastic opportunity to get up there and speak your mind. And making people laugh is a wonderful power to have. Mm-hmm. It becomes like an addiction. It really does. There's such great enjoyment in sharing your thoughts and making a room full of people laugh really hard. And I've sort of got to have a career in that, which has been very fortunate for me. I also work in drama and I do musicals and other forms of performance. And making people cry is great. If you touch them and you move them and you make them think about something doing a dramatic play. But I always come back to how satisfying comedy is, that it's so much more satisfying to make people laugh.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you find that most comedians do it in their spare time or are like you and they make a career out of it?
There's a real range. A lot of the Victoria performers right now are they've just started out. A lot of them have full-time jobs in other areas and they're doing it as a hobby. And then there are those who do choose to make it a career. For example, I've got Zandra Bell and Don Dumont who are coming out from Edmonton, and they both tour Canada regularly, making a career in comedy. So it's a choice that you make. Mm-hmm. And at some point, people say, I've had enough of my boring job at the office. I really want to make a go of it.
I bet the boring job has a lot of good comedy in it, though.
Yeah, that's true, right? And, well, you can look at comics who talk about, I used to be a teacher, and now I'm going to talk about how horrible the kids were.
Yeah, yeah, that's great.
You know, bring your real life into your comedy.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So do you think that women approach comedy differently than men and talk about different topics than men?
That's a good question. I think men, when they start out, are more drawn to talking about the dirty stuff because they know that's going to get a reaction from the audience. But, you know, women aren't shying away from that either. And for the women who are performing at my festival, there's more than, we've got 20 performers. And so I think you'll see that whole range of styles, people talking about maybe topics you'd expect, like boyfriends and body image, but then people really going in another direction. So I think as women, there, we've got a huge range of things that we like to talk about.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Can you highlight some of the comedians that are actually going to be coming?
Absolutely. I mentioned Zandra Bell, and she plays a character. So we've got character comedy, and she wears this crazy leopard skin hat, and she's a wellness expert, and so she talks about wellness, and it's hilarious. Dawn Dumont is a Plains Cree. She's actually a lawyer by training, and she tours Canada. Rachel Summer is from Winnipeg, and she's a full-time optometrist.
Oh, wow.
But she tours as a comedian. And Melanie Rose is a Vancouver comedian who also appears in the TV show She Kills Me. And she also uses her humor to promote mental health awareness, which is, again, fantastic, using comedy to give a voice to some issues that are often stigmatized, right? Mm-hmm. And then we've got some amazing Victoria performers. Seven of them are UVic alumni, people who've studied educational psychology, English, sociology, a theater major, and from the writing department. And even one of the women who's performing does burlesque, and she's a women's studies major. So it's kind of interesting what you can do with your background.
Yet.
I think doing comedy takes an interest in the world and a creativity. And so I find it interesting that the performers have this really diverse educational background.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's great. I'm a social major and a women's studies minor. So
there you
good
go.
To know I have a career in comedy, possibly.
Exactly.
What has been the response from the audience so far, or like from your She Kills Me? Have you heard any response from that?
And it's been crazy social media response right across the country. It airs on Aboriginal People's Television Network, so each episode features a First Nations performer. Okay. And there's just been tons of support. Women are just so thrilled. A lot of them, it is their very first time being on national television, so their families are excited and their friends are excited. And so we're super happy with the response for that. that.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And was there something, anything else that you wanted to bring up? I noticed that you have a couple.
Sure. Another show that I do in town that is women are a very important part of is an improvised serial called Sin City. Okay. And it's a long form of improv where we basically play the same characters every week, but the story moves forward in front of your eyes. So it's an improvised play. And this year our setting is called Kingdom of Thrones.
Oh.
So we kind of have a little bit of the Game of Thrones feel, a little bit of Once Upon a Time fairy tale, but it's all improvised and it's funny. So we do that on Tuesday nights right till the end of April, and we've got a fabulous cast of improvisers. Women are a strong part of the show, and and the men are fabulous as well, so hopefully people will want to check that out. It's SinCityImprov.com.
That's great. Yeah, so if somebody wanted to get involved in comedy, how would they start that? So obviously everybody has a very diverse background in getting into it, and there's not really any set ways, but
In the stand-up comedy world, there's something called an open mic. Okay. And so every city will have a bunch of comedy clubs where you can either sign up just on the spot or in advance, and you get 3 minutes at the mic, or in some places it's 5 minutes, to just get up there and try and make people laugh. And sometimes you can imagine it does not go very well, because people maybe had a few beverages and weren't really thinking. They're just going up on a dare. Other people, they get up their first time and they do really well, and they go, oh my gosh, that was amazing, I want to try it again. So an open mic is one way to start. Another way to start would be to take a class like I offer. I offer a 7 to 8 week stand-up class where I tell people all the inside information so that you don't stumble when you get out there, and I give writing exercises, and they get up every week and they try out their new material. Mm-hmm. And by the end of the session, they've got a really strong 5 minute set, and we do a performance. And most of the time, it's their first time performing.
That's exciting.
And it's hugely exciting. We get, you know, all their friends and family come out, and half the time they're like, oh, we didn't really think you'd be funny, or you know, we think of you in this one way, and we never expected you to succeed. And so it's always a super fun time. So those are the two really great ways to just jump in. And for people, I always meet people who think, you know, I've always wanted to try stand up, and I say just go for it. Mm-hmm. You know, what's the worst thing that's going to happen is people don't laugh, and then you're done.
Sounds like it's kind of like dating, you know?
You just got to close your eyes and jump in, right? Yeah. You have to be brave. You have to be courageous, or there's, you know, no payoff for it.
That's true. And you can always use your bad experience. I do this on dates all the time. If I have a really bad date, I bring it up on the next date.
So, exactly.
You know, this turned out a lot better than my last date.
That's exactly it. Yeah. You take, if some joke didn't work, you can think about it and go, oh, here's how I can fix it, or I'll drop it and I'll try something different next time. So there's a huge amount of trial and error in stand-up comedy and in dating.
Yes. So do you think it's a confidence builder? That's something that you mentioned, how people go up there and their family doesn't realize that they have this kind of funny streak in them. Do you find that it gives people that empowerment and confidence?
I think it absolutely does, because out of all the forms of entertainment like that I do, I think stand-up comedy is the scariest, because it is just you and the microphone. Mm-hmm. When I do theater, you know, you've got the costumes, you have the set, you have a director. When you do improv, you're playing with other people, so you have their support, but it's just you and the audience with stand-up. So to me, if you can survive that, you should feel really proud of yourself, and I certainly see, like, it takes a huge amount of courage. So I admire people who do it, whether at the beginner level or at the professional. Like, just to get up there on a regular basis is a huge risk. Mm-hmm. And so I think that to survive that risk does build your confidence.
Absolutely. What's one of your favorite onstage moments for you?
Oh, that's almost impossible to ask, because I've had so many. Like, in 2013, I decided to count how many performances I did, and I did 103.
Oh, wow.
And that included everything from dramas to musicals to stand-up to improv. And so I had a lot of highlights last year, and I had a few kind of horrifying moments as well. For example, when a cell phone went off in the middle of, I had a very serious monologue at the end of the play where we were all crying and the audience was crying, and someone's cell phone rang.
Oh,
so
no.
That was memorable. But for me, the best moments always involve the unexpected. Whether it's a stand-up or improv, where this magical moment happens that you didn't quite expect, something comes out of your mouth, hopefully that is amusing, and the audience rewards rewards you with a gigantic laugh. So those are my favorite moments. And I feel a responsibility to my audience, too. If they're paying to see me, then I want to deliver, and I take that responsibility seriously. So after a show, I'm always like, whew, okay, good, pulled it off.
I'm done. Yeah. What do you do if somebody doesn't laugh? What's the next step?
Well, you soldier on, right? Yeah. Either to the next joke, or you make a comment about it that might get a laugh, or in the case of improv, well, you just keep going, and the next moment will hopefully bring you that laugh. But you have to shrug it off and be brave and move forward.
Yeah, absolutely. So what do you see next for you? What's after? So the Comedy Festival is actually February 21st and 22nd. So do people buy tickets for that?
Yes, you can get tickets in advance at Ticket Rocket, and they're $20 in advance for either night or $25 at the door. And we're also having a luncheon on the Sunday afternoon, which is, I call it a hangover / networking brunch, because there's so many amazing women in Victoria who run different arts organizations that some I've met and others I want to meet. And I was like, oh, why don't we just have everyone get together, all the comedians who've performed, and they can have a nice brunch and meet these women. So that's another event that concludes the festival this year on the Sunday. And same thing, you can get tickets at the door or in advance. And then after that, I have no idea what might come my way. I'm an actor, so I'm always auditioning for theater and film. I probably have a musical cabaret that I'll be performing. I'll be continuing with the Sin City Improv on Tuesday nights until the end of April. And I've got a number of television projects in the back burner. So It's kind of interesting to be self-employed in the entertainment business, because you can't always plan too far in advance. I have no idea what I might be working on in the summer or in the fall, but fingers crossed, something fun will come along.
Yeah, hopefully. And lastly, so someone wants to get into comedy, what's your first piece of advice to them, or best piece of advice?
Be brave and jump in, And you'll be rewarded with it'll be satisfying no matter what happens, so go for it.
Yeah, awesome. Great. Thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you, Jen.
This is Women on Air, and we had several guests on, so I'll just do a quick summary. So first we had Amy from the Backhomes, and talking about her music and her art. The Backhomes are actually playing this Thursday, February 20th, at the Copper Owl. So if you enjoyed listening to her interview or the music that we played, definitely go check them out. They're a great band. And then we also had a guest from the Women's Center. They're doing their annual Panty Drive, and they're raising proceeds and collecting goods for the Downtown Eastside Women's Center and Piers Victoria. And you can find more information on their Facebook page and drop off any donations you have here at UVic or at Camosun at the Women's Centers. And then lastly, I had an interview with Kirsten Van Ritsen, who is the artistic director of the Funny Women Festival, which is taking place this weekend, Friday, February 21st, and Saturday, February 22nd, at the Victoria Event Center. So if you are interested in that, we have lots of things that you can do this week and check out, and some great comedy, hopefully. And that's it. Up next, we have True North with Johnny, and that's it. So have a great day.